Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Nitin Sahani. I'm a graduate student here at MIT. I'd like to thank you all for coming today, despite the weather. As you all know, the Middle East has been going through quite a turmoil in the last couple of months, as the conflict in Israel has deeply escalated. There have been ongoing protests, violent clashes, excessive military actions, all causing great loss of life for both Israelis and Palestinians. In this particular instance, the casualties have been predominantly Palestinian, many of them women and children. During this difficult period, here in Boston and Cambridge, many different groups of students have been very active, hosting events, discussions, exhibitions, protests, lectures like this one, all across the city. I just want to name a few of these groups for you. The Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights, the Arab Students Organizations, both here at MIT, Harvard, and many other schools, the Alliance for a Secular and Democratic South Asia, the Trans-Arab Research Institute, and many, many others. It's truly remarkable how these individuals and groups have come together in solidarity for a shared cause. With people from diverse backgrounds as Arabs, Jews, Americans, and South Asians like myself. So on behalf of these groups today, we are very pleased to have Professor Noam Chomsky, who has offered to speak on this subject. When I asked Professor Chomsky for an appropriate title for his lecture, he suggested, "The Current Crisis in the Middle East, What Can We Do About It?" In a preface to a recent edition of his book, The Fateful Triangle, U.S., Israel, and the Palestinians, Professor Chomsky once quipped about how whenever he's asked to give a title for a lecture, sometimes several months or years ahead of time, he can safely assume a title such as The Current Crisis in the Middle East. Because you can be sure that there will always be a crisis there. But for his talk today, Professor Chomsky asked me to make one important distinction, that there's not one, but multiple crises in the Middle East. And much of it, as he claims in his writings, can be attributed to the policy of the United States in the Middle East. This particular region, the Middle East, is an important region for the U.S. It's the most strategic region at the moment. And these policies have a major impact not only on the fate of Israelis and Palestinians, but on the stability of the world as a whole. This is what Professor Chomsky will remind us in his talk today. Now, just a note that this event is a completely student-organized activity. To make the event accessible to a broader audience, we've asked MIT to provide audio-video production for videotaping, cable broadcasting throughout campus, and webcasting services to have a live webcast all across the nation. To cover these expenses and ensure future such events, we're asking individuals to make a personal donation. So at the end of the talk, if you like, you may leave a small donation. All additional funds that are donated will be contributed to medical relief for Palestinian hospitals in the occupied territories. There will be two people outside at the end of the talk to take that, if you like. Before we introduce Professor Chomsky, I'd like to first ask Leila Farsakh to say a few words about the Palestinian perspective. Leila is presently a research affiliate at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University. She is a fellow at the Trans-Arab Research Institute in Boston. She's a graduate in development studies from the University of Cambridge, UK, and has been working for a number of years on the Palestinian economy and the issues of migration there. So over the last few months, Leila has been very active in local groups like the BCPR, helping raise awareness about the crises. And in September of this year, she actually visited the territories for academic fieldwork and witnessed the beginnings of the current conflict. Leila?
Thank you, Nathan, in particular, and I would like to thank the Alliance for Secular and Democratic Southeast Asia, who has taken the lead in organizing this very important lecture and who has shown important sign of solidarity and work have been a fundamental part of the Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights. Nathan, when we discussed organizing this lecture, has asked me to take and say a few words about the situation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. And he said to me, I have 5 minutes to do that, which is a particularly difficult thing to try and summarize the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. All what I can say is that you all know there has been now an ongoing intifada for the past 11 weeks. It's called the Al-Aqsa Uprising, Al-Aqsa Intifada, which erupted on the 28th of September this year. And by now, over 320 people have been killed, all but 32 of them are Palestinians. One third of all those who have been killed are children under the age of 18. Estimates vary, about 10,000 people have been injured, some of them with very dangerous and handicapping injuries. And as we're speaking today and now, clashes are still going on between Palestinian kids who are basically refusing Israeli occupation and an Israeli army that is claiming to be restraining but yet still is killing two children. People in the U.S. do not get a real opportunity to know what is happening really on the ground and just understand the gravity of the human and the political situation, especially today as Israeli settlers, military officials, and Palestinian gunmen get entangled with what is going on the ground and obscure the fact that the Intifada presently remains fundamentally an uprising of Palestinian civilians throwing stones against an Israeli army to express their refusal of an occupation that has continued despite the peace process. I think many of people have been taken by surprise with this present Intifada. After all, the Palestinians and the Israeli side have been talking for peace for over 7 years. Arafat and Rabin have shook hands at the White House lawn on September 13, 1993. And both leaders have signed what is called the Peace Interim Agreement that should have allowed the Palestinians and the Israelis to learn to live together in peace and sign a final peaceful agreement. Yet, people in the States do not know that the Peace Interim Agreement, what is called the Oslo Agreement, has sowed the seeds of mistrust rather than actually sowed the seed of peace. And it did not eliminate and end the occupation, but rather institutionalize it. And it is this, against this nature of occupation that had remained during this peaceful Peace Interim Agreement, that the Palestinians are rebelling. Few people know that since 1993, since the signing of the famous Declaration of Principle, which started the peace process between the Palestinians and the Israelis, few people know that the number of settlements have actually grown. Since 1993, over 30,000 new houses, Israeli houses, have been built in the Israeli settlements in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and also in East Jerusalem. According to various international resolutions and according to the Fourth Geneva Convention, with that applies to the West Bank and Gaza Strip, Israeli settlements are illegal and Israeli settlers have no right to live in the occupied areas. Yet the number of settlers have increased by 80% since 1994. Today, a total of 400,000 settlers nearly are living in the West Bank, Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem. Meanwhile, over 400 kilometers of bypass roads have been built and the Palestinian land has been further fragmented into unconnected cantons. The maps at the entrance of this hall should have provided you with an idea of the territorial reality of the peace process. It has namely created a reality of fragmented Palestinian enclaves that are not connected to one another, that are cut by Israeli bypass roads and Israeli settlements, and who do not create any basis for any viable Palestinian state. Needless to say that also on the economic front, just like on the territorial front, the life of the Palestinian people further deteriorated. Also did not provide the basis for the creation of a Palestinian state, nor did it protect Palestinian people, nor did it protect human rights violations. And Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have various documents about the violation of human rights that continue to take place ever since 1993. But Palestinian suffering is not only linked to what is happening in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. It is intrinsically bound also to the history of Palestinian suffering that is the result of Israeli persecution that has been going on for over 50 years. As most of you know, or many of you know, over 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homeland with the creation of the state of Israel in 1948. Today, these refugees number a total of 3.8 million Palestinians living in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, the West Bank and Gaza and other areas. These refugees have experienced two exoduses, the first in 1948 and the second in 1967. The Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982 has further aggravated their plight. The author process did not talk about the refugees, had completely forgot about them, and did not talk about their fundamental right of return, restitution, and compensation, which have been protected by UN Resolution 194. Yet, without a just and fair solution to the Palestinian refugees, there can be no sustainable and viable peace in the area. Nobody knows when will this intifada continue or whether it will end. For some people, this intifada is reminiscent of the 1987 intifada, the famous uprising whose anniversary was just a few days ago, and that brought to the attention of the world the plight of the Palestinian people. Yet, the number of people killed in this intifada in less than 3 months far outweighs the number of the people killed in the first year of the intifada of 1987. The human rights violation and the damages are outrageous and are very high. Many fear for the life of the civilian, both on the Israeli and the Palestinian side. And the cycle of violence must end before it can aggravate into further decay and misery. People in Palestine have clearly said that they want the end of the occupation, the retreat of Israel from 1967 borders, and the establishment of a viable and contiguous Palestinian state. The question remains whether this will be now possible, and if so, or is it a little bit too late? The U.S., the United States, and the people in the United States have definitely a role to play in helping the foundation of peace to be built in Palestine, Israel, or not at all. Thank you very much.
Professor Chomsky is here, but to introduce him, I'd like to ask Avasur. She is a lecturer at MIT and coordinates the South Asia Forum in the Science, Technology, and Society program. Abha is an active member of the Alliance for Secular and Democratic South Asia. She's an articulate voice for justice and human rights in the region. With her active participation over the last few years, the Alliance has organized many such lectures, protests about human rights violations and injustices in South Asia. Abha.
Thank you, Nitin. I will take very short time to first tell you a little bit about the Alliance for a Secular and Democratic South Asia. The Alliance was formed in 1993 to counter the rising religious intolerance in South Asia and to campaign for peace and justice in the region. For the last 7 years, we have organized lectures, panel discussions, conferences, and cultural programs that emphasize our syncretic and composite culture and polity. We have campaigned for the rights of those persecuted by religious extremists, such as the Bangladeshi writer Taslima Nasreen, and have condemned state-supported violence in the region. We are deeply committed to working toward a just and equitable South Asia. We believe that democracy is not merely a ritual casting of votes, but is fundamentally about a fair and equitable distribution of resources and must entail a deep and abiding respect for religious, ethnic, and cultural differences. Secularism, then, is not a choice, but a necessity for the diverse and deeply interlinked societies of South Asia. Today, we stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the Middle East. Why, you may ask, should an organization like the Alliance get involved in organizing an event like this? Well, I can think of a number of reasons, but I'll stick with two. First, I believe that the crisis in the Middle East is fundamentally about distribution of resources and about ensuring basic rights of the Palestinians. In this respect, we do have a commonality of struggle, and thus we see it as our responsibility to get involved. But there is a more immediate reason. A few weeks ago, I happened to be talking to a Palestinian woman. She told me of the deep trauma her society faced here. She told me how some of her own relatives had died in the recent clashes and how daily living had become almost unbearable. And then, with more sadness than ever, she told me about her daughter, who had finally refused to participate in yet another rally, yet another demonstration, because it was all too much. I believe no community should suffer alone, that we must all come together to oppose injustice wherever we see it. And so we are here today to share in the sorrow and to raise our voice in unison against injustice and oppression. And we have amongst us a voice that has never faltered in its relentless opposition to the structures of oppression. It is indeed my privilege to introduce to you our very own Noam Chomsky. We have known Noam Chomsky as a noted and formidable linguist who has forever changed the direction of linguistics. We also know him as a political philosopher and activist who has supported people's struggles throughout the world, in East Timor, in Haiti, in Nicaragua, in Central America, in Southeast Asia, and in South Asia. He spoke for the Alliance a few years ago. For me personally, Noam Chomsky has been two separate people, one a linguist, another the activist. And it is only recently that I have come to understand the deep link that is there between his academic scholarship and his political activism. His universal language also tells us about universal morality, the codes of morals that we have, that we as humans have, that we are able to distinguish between what is right and what is wrong. We are able to distinguish between what is just and what is unjust. And I believe that this fundamental link between his scholarship and his activism is what makes him such an inspiring figure to us. We have all learned from him, and today we learn once again what role the United States plays in this crisis in the Middle East. So without much ado, I'd like to introduce to you Noam Chomsky.